just on pain alone, what do you think would have happened if they wouldn't have been there?
It's not what I think. It's guaranteed. It's I would have not survived. I would have died. There is, there was a drive in me that was, I mean, it was tiny, but there was a drive to live. And I can guarantee you the pain that I was in, if I had no one there with me, I would not have lasted. I just couldn't have done it.
How critical do you think in your situation was prayer?
I think that I was literally teetering on the edge, and I was not so much teetering as almost leaning towards the precipice that would lead to death. And I honestly think that some of those prayers kind of tipped the scale, and that's what kept me here, was because of having people that some knew me and many didn't, were offering their time to pray for my life.
Welcome to There Is Hope. Any advice or counsel given is provided for informational purposes only. Your host for There Is Hope, Richard Dover.
This is your radio host, Richard Dover, and we're doing another interview with my son, Joshua Dover. We've been talking several times about his motorcycle crash that took place in August. This recording is taking place in the first week of January, and so he's had about 5 months of recovery time. What we want to do is talk about patient advocacy and the importance of that. So, Josh, you ready for the interview?
Yes, sir.
I know that your voice probably isn't doing too good today, sounds like.
Yeah, I've been having a little bit of trouble with my voice and my brain, but I'm okay. I got this.
All right. Okay.
I can do this. Listeners get to hear the reality of what really goes on, so that's why I'm okay to do the interview.
Yeah, reality. But if we wait until you get better, we don't know, right?
Yep, exactly.
Josh, when we talk about patient advocacy, you go into the hospital, you know nothing as you go in the hospital, correct?
That's correct.
And it was how many days before you, when you were in the hospital, how many days before you actually knew you were in the hospital for real? As we talked about the interview before, you actually thought you had been captured and that Al-Qaeda was torturing you, but it was about a week before you realized where you were at?
Yeah, I believe it was around a week, and I don't think I really understood too much of where I was, but more of that I was in an accident, and that kind of became clear because of after they took off the ketamine, I finally had some pretty amazing pain, and so I just knew that I was really hurt, and I wasn't sure really, like, mentally what was going on, anything. I just knew that I was in a lot of pain, and I couldn't move very well.
It turned out, even though COVID, people aren't supposed to be in the hospital and stuff, so when did your family members know that you were in the accident?
Yeah, they my aunt and my mother and my sister were all driving in, I believe it was in Medford. They were going shopping or something, and they received a phone call. I believe it was my mother, that I had been in an accident and that they were going to send me to the Asante Hospital. And so they went there.
And that's in Medford.
That's in Medford. And then within a few hours of being there, I know all three of them were there, but within a few hours of me being at the hospital, they discovered I had a ruptured aorta. So they put me back on a helicopter and flew me to HSU. Yeah, my mother and my sister went and quickly packed up some things and then drove immediately to Portland. And they were there on the first, the same day of the accident. They were there pretty much from day one.
Now only one of them could be in the hospital at the time?
Yeah, they have, because of COVID restrictions, you could only have one visitor per 24 hours. And so they couldn't, like, do, you know, one do day, one do night. It was, you know, you get one person for the 24 hours, and it's however long that person can last. And obviously, you need to get sleep. So they were typically there with me during the day, and then they would leave usually pretty late in the evening, honestly. It was probably around 10 o'clock, and they'd get there probably around 7 o'clock in the morning. So it was essentially a full day shift.
I actually know that some days that I had talked with your mom, and she was there up to midnight till 1 o'clock in the morning at times. So,
yeah, if I had an episode of level 10 pain, then neither of them would leave if I was in level 10 pain. And because those episodes were usually 4 to 5 hours long, you know, if it started at 10 o'clock, then they're going to be there, you know, in the wee hours of the morning.
Okay, so we're talking about patient advocacy. So if at some places it's been COVID, family members can't come in at all, no matter what. Absolutely
yes,
cannot come
in. In Oregon, yes.
And well, even here in Arkansas, it's been the same thing. There's been times people can't come in at all. Now, if you look back at that time when your mom was there at the level 10 pain, when these were times you were in pain, you didn't even, you know, still know what was going on. You just knew the pain. And look over the last several months. If your family members had not been involved, just take the pain, not talk about all the other stuff that people have been involved in. Just being your advocate for you dealing with your pain, helping to work through your pain, work with the doctors for pain medication, all that. Just on pain alone, what do you think would have happened if they wouldn't have been there?
It's not what I think. It's guaranteed. I would have not survived. I would have died. There was a drive in me that was, I mean, it was tiny, but there was a drive to live. And I can guarantee you the pain that I was in, if I had no one there with me, I would not have lasted. I just couldn't have done it.
You would have said give up. You would have said I'm done.
Exactly. I honestly believe that you really, in a circumstance of where you're in a kind of a teetering moment, whether you live or die, your attitude, I think, and your, you know, what's in your head and heart, kind of make a difference whether you're going to live or die. And I, because of that pain, I mean, it was astronomical. If I would have just gave up completely, my body would just shut down, and it would have basically taken the easy way out.
And in the midst of it, there were at times, like you say, 5 or 6 hours that your mom was helping you, mom or sister, was helping you to breathe, were talking to you, how to address the pain. How many times were there nurses helping you through that?
As far as the pain goes, I had some good nurses and some other nurses, but as far as the pain went, the only real, side chair coaching or side bed coaching was my mother and my sister. The nurses, you know, they'd be kind and everything, but as far as holding my hand and trying to say kind things to me and help me to get through things, that was only done by a family member. The nurses were in there. They, you know, would do whatever they were there for, whether it was adding medication or helping me, you know, use a bedpan or something like that. That's what they were doing. But as far as going through that pain, all they did was give me pain medication way too late that did absolutely nothing. So to get through the pain at level 10 and such, that was all family members.
And in the midst of your family members helping you out, the other issue was, and this has happened from almost until now, several months later, but the big issue has been of when it's medicating and doing different things, is you keep going in the emergency room for different issues, and then you're starting the pain treatment management all over again. Do you think if there wasn't times your mom was getting in their face and saying, that doesn't work with them, look at the charts, it never has worked with them, all that kind of stuff, do you think anybody else would have done that for you? Anybody on staff or social worker, anybody would have done that for you?
No, and no one would even know to do that for me. I mean, you'd have to know, you know, back history, family history to even know that. You know, my sister doesn't respond at all to some of the drugs that they gave me, and they both knew, my mom and my sister, that I don't respond to a few different medications that are used for pain. And if it was not for them literally getting kind of a little upfront with the doctors and nurses, telling them, hey, you guys keep trying these drugs in high doses, and we know they don't work. Please stop and do something else. And they had to do that for weeks before the doctors finally either listened or they ran out of drugs, and they happened to pick the one that I do respond to.
Even probably, I don't know, it was about a month and a half ago, you went in with a collapsed lung in the emergency room. You had paralysis another time you went to the emergency room. And we were encountering the same thing again. And now that I knew what was going on and what your body could take and not take, I was pretty adamant that I started calling people and saying, you need to check his medical charts, and you're not going to what I call experiment on you. For those who are listening, we are recording this. I'm in Arkansas. Joshua's in Oregon. We always have full reception. Arkansas, a lot of places, so starts to cut in and out. And hopefully it'll be clear enough that you can hear him. But Joshua, one of the things is you've gone in for collapsed lung. You've gone in for paralysis. We found out the paralysis is based upon some of the pain that you're going through. But do you feel like every time you're going in the hospital that you were like an experiment? They were experimenting on you, and if you didn't have your family intervening, you would have been in the worst pain, and they'd have been doing stuff that absolutely has no effect on you if it wasn't for family members. Is that accurate?
Oh, it's 100% accurate. Every single time I wound up back in the hospital from a problem with my body trying to shut down on me, they would treat me as if they didn't even look at my chart, and I would be essentially forced to go into level 10 pain for at least a day or two before they would actually listen to what my mom would be telling them over and over from day one. And when they'd see me in level 10 pain 2 days in a row because they weren't getting it right, they would finally listen and fortunately would actually give me the drugs that actually do respond, or I do respond to. And it was just an unfortunate thing because their mistakes caused me pain. Them not choosing to read my chart or listen to my mother when she's desperately pleading with them. And literally, I remember in my head, I remember hearing my mom crying, trying to plead with the doctor while I'm sitting there almost out of my mind in pain.
So what happened is when I found out about all this, I called the VA, I called the hospital, I called everybody, and made it clear that they have to have a protocol to put on your charts exactly how pain management works with you. And so that if you ever went to the emergency room again, you ever went to another hospital, all it would take is a family member say, call up Asante and look up his charts, which most of the time they can look at charts any place in the nation. A lot of the charts are all available now through Epic. So I'm down, what are the protocols? And so they came up with a standard procedure for you. Not the time. But you feel confident if you go in the emergency room again and you're in high level pain and look at the charts, yeah, this is how we deal with this.
I don't know that I'd say I feel confident just because so many times over and over again we've pleaded and everything else, and I really think it depends on the doctor individually if they have humility and they'll actually look when my mother or I say something, because it doesn't matter what's written if they don't look, if they just have their own agenda or think that, you know, they can figure it out, or that, you know, they can.
So let's go to another area of advocacy and patient advocacy. Were there times where you felt like you just weren't being listened to, whatever it may be, whether it's describing what you're going through, describing some of your, you know, like the sleep apnea, that was another issue. Remember that part of your slow recovery is then because you weren't getting enough oxygen into your body, your brain, and your muscles and everything else. And there was the battle over the sleep apnea and being able to get the CPAP machine. You want to address that a little bit of where, what do you think would have happened if there hadn't been people jumping on your behalf? And I will say there was even hospital or VA people and others that started jumping in, and then it seemed like all of a sudden something happened. So how do you feel about that?
Well, if I'm totally honest, I think just those listeners that have been listening to some of these podcasts can hear the difference in my voice and the way I'm speaking, and I believe that's attributed to the fact that I was unfortunately did not get the CPAP and the oxygen from the CPAP at night soon enough, and I believe that I would honestly be in a lot worse shape if I didn't have anyone in the background advocating for me. But I believe that right now I have a lot of cognitive problems as of late, and it's I believe that hopefully I'll recover, but I've had some damage from lack of oxygen to my brain, and that causes me lots of problems. But I believe I'd be even worse shape had I not had anyone advocating, because according to the last report, before they rushed me a CPAP, I was at least 2 weeks away from getting it mailed to me, and that's after almost 2.5 months of when it was originally noted that I needed it, or excuse me, 3.5 months.
Yeah, it was 3.5 months. Distance of time. And what happened, again, different family members talking to different people and really pushing, and we ended up getting somebody, I don't remember, I think they were up in Portland, I can't remember, but it was somebody through the VA that...
It was Shiloh, it was Nurse Shiloh, is the one that really was at the head of the hammer, and she rattled everyone's chains and demanded a response, and it is because of her ability and her position that ultimately the CPAP was sent to me 2 weeks early.
Yeah, and we'll say approved 2 weeks early, because it wasn't sent to you, because it was the same thing. Your mom actually driving to go pick up the machine for you so you could get started on it. And so as me and you have talked, we've talked about you doing these podcasts, and you know, sometimes you have a lot of hope, sometimes you're not as hopeful. You look at, you know, why this all happened, what's the purpose of it, how can this be turned around for good? And one of the things that you talked about is you would like to be that, to be healthy enough that you can kind of be a coach or a mentor to other vets that go through certain things. You want to talk a little bit about that, of how, because of your own experience, you have a burden to be an advocate for others. So, Josh, can you share kind of what your burden is to help others that maybe go through the same situation? You may not be a motorcycle crash, but it could be all kinds of different things where people aren't listening to them, or they're by themselves, they're alone, they have nobody to be their advocate. And you say that you want to take some of your time when you get better to help others. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's honestly, I can't even fathom another person having to go what I've been going through, and to not have anyone there for them, I just don't know how you would even survive. And so because I've learned a lot about medical industry, really, I feel as though I need to help the other vets out there that are going through some pretty rough hospitalizations, and make sure that at least they know where to reach out to, and they know what hoops you have to jump through and everything to get the right care. And so I feel that there is definitely a need for that, not just for vets, but really anyone in general. But I have a heart for vets, obviously, because I am one myself.
Okay, and I think that you're the type And if you heard a guy was in a very bad situation and gotten into the hospital, and he could be a total stranger, that if you had the ability, you would go in that hospital and stay there for 8 hours a day, making sure that he was being taken care of.
I would go in his room and pitch my own little tiny tent. And I wouldn't stay there 8 hours. I'd be there 24 hours. Well, if I'm being honest, I'd be there 72 hours. I'd be there whatever hours it took. I honestly would probably stay there longer than my body can take it, just because I know what it was like. You know, during the day, it was even hard even having family there. But then at night, when you don't have anyone and you're dealing with, you know, pain and confusion and fear at night, and there's no one there, it's not something I would ever want on anyone else.
Yeah, just talk a little bit about that, because it's not only the pain, but it's the fear, the not really knowing what's going on. You're having cognitive issues from a TBI, another issue. Irritates all of our family members. It actually happened in August, and it's not until November, because you go in the emergency room, and then somebody goes, by the way, your son does have a TBI. It's just, and he's looking at the same MRI that they had in Portland. So it's not like there was anything new. It's just unbelievable when you think about some of this stuff. But why don't you talk a little bit about patient advocacy and that whole thing about fear and depression and emotional stuff. You know, we and you have talked over the phone long distance, and there was a time you went in the emergency room, and you pretty much were telling me, in so many words, you're telling me, and you certainly was telling your mom, I give up. I plan on dying tonight, pretty much. And that wasn't you doing anything to yourself, because there's nothing you could do to yourself. Why don't you talk about that emotion, that feeling, and that came on you a couple of times in the last several months.
Yeah, essentially just at that particular time, I had been rushed to the hospital because I couldn't breathe, and I was struggling desperately to get oxygen, and my body was pretty much giving up on me, and just having all the pain, excruciating pain, and then fighting just to get oxygen, it was so hard. And I honestly, I didn't have much left in me. And I did honestly believe that I was going to pass away that night. I know I called and kind of told it to you in not so many words. And I actually, as my mom went to leave that night in the hospital, I asked her to wait for a second, and with tears in my eyes, I told her, I want you to go tell my sister and my cousins and my aunt. I want you to tell my dad. I was listing off all my family members. I said, I want you to tell them I love them, and I just want them to know that I really, really cared about them, and I love them so much. And I pretty much was telling Mom I was saying goodbye, because I was so certain that I would not make it through the night. I just didn't have it in me. And by the grace of God, I made it through that night, and got a little bit of strength. It was the only reason I made it through that night.
Well, and when we all got that, we're calling with each other, we're praying, we're getting the prayer team praying. And so I want to go to that next level, and that's patient advocacy when it talks about prayer and the power of prayer. So you've said that if you didn't have people advocating for you, you would be dead. What about people praying for you through all this time? You've talked before about that, where you could sense there's people praying for you. How critical do you think in your situation was prayer?
I think the story that we just talked about was an example of that, where I was literally teetering on the edge, and I was not so much teetering as almost leaning towards the precipice that would lead to death. And I honestly think that some of those prayers kind of tipped the scale. And that's what kept me here, was because of having people that Some knew me, and many didn't. Were offering their time to, pray for my life.
And in the midst of all those prayers, there literally is people, almost all the people that are praying for you have never met you, know nothing about you. Some, because of the separation you and I had for so long, some had no idea I even had a son. So they owned me several years. Many of those people, here's the crazy part I want to talk about, the amazing thing about prayer and God and Christians and stuff, is because there are people praying for you still to this day that are praying for you. The only reason they know me, because I was a web designer for Captain Phil that was on The Deadliest Catch. That I used to maintain his forum and his chat room. And they know me from that. And that's been, I don't know how many years ago since he passed away, since that show. And those are a lot of the people that are praying for you. And it doesn't matter if they know you or not. What matters is that they pray. Because I think God knows your name, knows your address, knows how old you are, and everything about you. And in fact, I think he knows the things that you don't want him to know about you. So I want to end our show by talking about, as important it is, we could go for a very long time giving instance after instance after instance that it was a good thing that there was people interceding for Joshua through prayer and interceding through making phone calls, through family members being there at the hospital. All those are important, but another thing is to really look at it. But the biggest advocate that Joshua had is Jesus. It's God himself. And more important than anything else is to be on God's side. And I just want to encourage you, if you're listening, if you're going through some tough times, you're going through a battle, whether it's emotionally or physically or mentally, I just want to encourage you, don't try to do it on your own. Call out to God. He loves you. He cares about you. Joshua's, just like anybody else, has made bad choices along the way. He's made choices that aren't the best thing for his health, even to this day. He has some struggles because of some of those choices. But the good news is that God didn't say, well, you're not good enough, and so I'm not going to bother with you. God the Father has shown his love upon Joshua. He shows his love to every single one of us. Whether you know Jesus as your Lord and Savior, whether you're walking with God or not, if you call out to him, he will intervene. And the Bible says that Jesus is at the right hand of the Father and that he's interceding. He's standing in the gap for those who do know God. And the devil comes like a roaring lion and he throws his flaming darts and missiles. And I can tell you, Joshua's had every dart and missile and everything else you can think thrown at him. But Jesus has intervened. And I don't know, there's probably been, since that accident, there's been probably three times that family members actually talked about, you know, if it's time for Josh to go, we accept that, and we know he's right with God, and we don't want him to suffer anymore if God doesn't have a way out for him, and he's still here. And I believe he has a call in his life to somehow touch other people's lives and be an advocate for others. Josh, is there any one thing you want to say as we close this interview?
Just anyone that is listening that is struggling and going through some pretty hard and some might even feel horrific times, that call out to God, like you've said, and to get him to intervene. Sometimes that's even being angry and yelling for help and anger, saying why, and that's, it's not a problem to say that, to be confused and not know why you're going through what you're going through. Just say something. You know, even if you feel like a loon, even in the hospital, I would say out loud, why, God? Why are you doing this? And, you know, I don't believe necessarily that he was doing it to me, but he was allowing it for a better purpose. And so just realize that you can cry out and you don't have to be perfect and you don't have to know, you know, the Lord's Prayer. You have to say anything the perfect way. You just have to say something, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just again, crying out whatever way there is. And I know that you have shared before, there was times you were angry and you know, figuratively shaking your fist at God. And you know, God, when you did that, he was really hurt and offended, and he didn't know how to handle it. It was really affecting his self-esteem, and he was all shook up, and he was really sad. Nah, God is able to handle those things with no problem whatsoever, and he's very confident of who he is. It does not affect him. He does not get offended. He doesn't get hurt. And there is a difference between doing it that way and then when you're in absolute rebellion and you're shaking fists at God and you say, I'm going to do whatever I want. That's a totally different mindset than being at a place where you're crying out to God and you don't know what in the world is going on and you just feel like you can't handle anymore. He comes through. I can say that's happened many, many times for me. And there is no right way. There's no wrong way. Actually, there is. The right way is just say, God, I need your help, and he will intervene. But Joshua, thank you for taking the interview. And I never know when I call you what you're going to be like. 2 days ago, you had so much energy in life, and now I interview you, and you have, it sounds like, no energy whatsoever. And like you said at the beginning of this interview, people need to see the real thing, and we try to have the real story, and we're not trying to make up anything. We just want it to be real. So thank you for the willingness to do this show. I know your brain has been foggy. For those who are listening, every question to Josh, we've had to coach him a little bit what we were talking about because he's kind of had brain fog going on, and that's part of the problem. I mean, 1 minute I talk to Josh and he's going 100 miles an hour and he's got it all together, and the next minute he's not doing well, and that's just part of his journey. And like we said at the beginning of the show, if we waited till he was perfect, we would never do any of these podcasts. So thank you, Josh, for taking the time and going through a little bit of stress of doing this.
Not a problem, and I just hope that people will know that there is help out there, and just don't give up.
So you've been listening to There Is Hope Radio. This is your radio host, Richard Dover. I've been talking with my son, Joshua. If you would like to hear other interviews that we've done with Joshua, you can go to thereishoperadio.org. That's thereishoperadio.org, and all of our podcasts are there with Joshua. We also have over 100, maybe 200 podcasts. I think it's more like 200 podcasts of various interviews we've done with individuals over the years. We did a show for 3 years, or actually 5 years. We did a show on addiction and recovery. And a lot of those podcasts are right there at thereishoperadio.org. If you need to know more about Jesus, you can give a call anytime. Just give the phone. And if you need prayer, so not only if you want to know about Jesus, but if you need prayer, you can call 1-866-1-GOD. That's 1-866-1-GOD. And we can take your prayer requests. We're also doing some spiritual coaching and mentoring if you want that too. So, again, you can call 1-866-1-GOD. That's 1-866-1-GOD. WANTGOD. Again, thank you, Josh, for the interview.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to There Is Hope, and any advice or counsel given was provided for informational purposes only. For more information on what you've heard about today, click on thereishoperadio.org. That's thereishoperadio.org.